Mel was showing me the an article about some of the most common frauds that cost us money, and I was kind of shocked to see some of these things and the fact that only 5% of people actually report any of them.
Yeah, and that's a conservative estimate at the end of the day. A study by the University of McMaster back in 2008 showed 13% of victims of ID fraud reported to police, and under 1% actually reported to the fraud center. So we know reporting rates vary from scam to scam, so we conservatively say 5% reporting rate. And at the same time, our capacity doesn't let us get to every report that's coming in right now because there's so many reports coming in. So it's certainly a big problem.
So we've noticed a huge increase in the public service announcements and news stories and that kind of thing about cyber scams. And yet, how does this social insurance scam have legs anymore? Like, how is it still going?
Yeah, it's really a game of numbers. Obviously, they're successful. I compare it to, when people ask me that question, what's known as 419 fraud or the Nigerian print scam or West African fraud letters, these things started out with through the fax machine and regular mail, and they continue today through email, right? And they've existed for a very long time, and they continue to happen today because of the success. So it's the same with the Service Canada SIN number scam or the CRA extortion scam. We started picking up on this in about 2014. We've seen spikes and valleys in this scam since that time, based on arrests over in India or different arrests in Canada as well. So it's a game of numbers, and if they continue to have success, they're going to continue to try.
Have we seen, or have you guys seen, a spike in the just dollar amounts that go because of technology? Back when it was fax, I'm sure you couldn't have access to everyone's bank account. Maybe people, weren't willing to let you touch their mattress because they had lumps of cash in it, but now because everything's all digital, is there the numbers themselves are they that much bigger?
Not necessarily. The reporting's definitely gone up. Right now we say about 40%, I think the last time I looked, of our reports relate to internet, email, social media type reporting, right? So it's slowly creeping up into the mix, but telemarketing fraud still remains the most prevalent type of fraud that's reported to us, obviously because of these mass calling campaigns. At the same time, you see these mass phishing scams at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, for instance, when we saw these mass, click here to get your CERB benefit type phishing emails and text messages that went out.
Yeah.
So a lot of cases, I think, with the email type scams, you just see people delete it and may not get reported, right? So again, underreported. But yeah, it's certainly creeping up into the mix, and it certainly accounts for a large proportion of our dollar loss that gets reported.
So I'm looking at your top 10 list of cyber security issues here. What's spear phishing? It seems to be the one that victims lose the most money to.
Yeah, spear phishing, also known as wire fraud, refers to a targeted email attack, typically targeting businesses. But more recently, a new trend popped up on the radar where we're seeing these spear phishing attempts targeting individuals. So what that would look like is you get an email from a friend that looks like it's coming from an email friend's account that you recognize, saying, I need your help. I've lost my wallet. My son's birthday's coming up, and I need you to go buy me some gift cards and send me the numbers. So because you trust the source, you don't pick up the phone and call to verify. You go buy these gift cards and you send it to them, and it could be that your friend's account's been compromised by fraudsters. In the business sense, it's the same idea where you're going to get an email from the CEO, president of the company you work at, asking for an urgent wire transfer. That's why you see the high dollar loss there, because it's usually a request for a wire transfer. Any losses over 10 grand, the fraudsters are typically asking for a bank-to-bank wire transfer.
Because this is so underreported and all these are so underreported, that must make your job and your colleagues' jobs a lot tougher to try to catch these people, because you probably know of it but don't know specific cases or how to attack it.
Yeah, I mean, every report we get, whether it's from a victim or somebody that's just been a target of a scam, contains, good information, whether it's an email address, IP addresses, phone numbers, names, addresses, how they've sent money, where they've sent money to. It's all good information for us to have and helps link cases together across Canada and even internationally in some cases.
The romance scam, have you noticed an increase in that with the since the spring, since the whole COVID-19 thing? People are feeling lonelier, or people reaching out more and using that as a way to scam?
Yeah, because we heard of dogs being scammed or since COVID hit.
Yeah,
certainly people in isolation, you know, more people hopping online looking for companionship. Whether it's, you know, buying a dog for the house or hopping online, just, you know, developing, an email pen pal or, you know, going through these chat websites or online dating websites to build up that companionship, right? So we've seen, you know, a variety of, as you've noted, you know, puppy scams, sin scams through the COVID-19 pandemic increase. You know, between romance scams and business email compromises or the spear phishing scams that you referenced there, that they're usually our top two reported scams year to year. They flip-flop back and forth. And again, yeah, romance scams are grossly, you know, they don't hit the top 10 in terms of number of reports received. But when you look at that dollar loss that happens here, it's massive.
Yeah.
And it causes significant emotional and psychological damage as well to the victims.
Yeah. So, we could go through and talk about extortion, the merchandise, the service, the job, all these different scams and everything. But, Jeff, how can we protect, I'm thinking mostly of our parents or our kids, like, how can we protect ourselves? What should we do?
It's really, you know, we've worked close with a lot of international partners, and in the UK, they've done a lot of good work with, say, behavioral scientists to look at what's working for fraudsters. And what it is they're trying to get victims off their game, not thinking straight, you know. So whether it's elation through a prize scam, love through a romance scam, or fear through an extortion scam, you know, if they invoke these sort of emotions in a victim, they're going to react to their demands or to their requests. So what we really want to get people to do is not react to these urgent, coercive, you know, spicy demands that are, you know, where somebody's just created this situation of panic, fear, and just, you know, you have to act urgently right away, right? These requests are playing on your emotions. Think about everything. You know, if anybody's asking for money that you've never met, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, scrutinize everything. Take time. Recognize, reject, report, right? Is our slogan. So recognize the fraudsters out there using email, text messages, the internet, phones to try and scam you. Reject, you know, scrutinize, do your due diligence, look everything up, talk to family members and friends, and then report it. You know, if police don't know what's happening in their communities, they can't help the victims, and they need to know what's happening.
So let's talk to the 95% that are not reporting their frauds, maybe because of shame or for whatever. What advice would you give to someone who has been frauded? And is there a statute of limitations? You know, if I got frauded a year ago, is it too late to report any of that?
Absolutely not. You know, in our books, like a fraud, you know, it hasn't happened until it gets reported. So if we don't know it's happening, you haven't reported it. You know, the investigation can start at any point. Keeping in mind, there's priorities when it comes to policing, right? So if you're walking in the door, say, with a $100 fraud that happened, you know, 3 years ago, what's the likelihood of, you know, gathering the evidence from that fraud 3 years ago, unless you have it all and, you know, accounts are still open, et cetera. So it may change the perspective from police in terms of investigating, but it's certainly worth reporting because again, it might have key pieces of information that might link current cases.
And if somebody wants to report something for themselves, for someone else, where do they go? How do they do that?
So, you know, step one to reporting is making sure you have everything together, right? Chronological statement, events, copies of documents, receipts, or correspondence. You know, have it all together. If you're a victim, definitely call your local police. Again, they're there to serve you, and they need to know what crimes are happening in their community. You can also contact the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center through our toll-free number, 888-495-8501, or online through our online fraud reporting system at www.antifraudcenter.ca.